knowledge fight. Dan and Jordan, I am sweating. KnowledgeFight.com. It's time to pray.
I have great respect for Knowledge Fight.
Knowledge Fight. I'm sick of them posing as if they're the good guys, saying we are the bad guys. Knowledge Fight.
Dan and Jordan.
Knowledge Fight.
I need money. Andy in Kansas. Stop it. Andy in Kansas. Andy. It's time to pray. Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan.
I love your work.
Knowledge Fight.
KnowledgeFight.com. I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes like to sit around, worship at the altar of Selene, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Oh, indeed we are, Dan.
Jordan.
Dan.
Jordan.
Quick question for you.
What's up?
What's your bright spot today, buddy?
Well, I think, you know, the end of the month is halfway here, and
we are in the Ides.
And next month, things might be different.
It's possible.
But March, I got to go first.
It's always you in March.
So that's the tradition, and I'm going to stick to it.
Okay.
And this bright spot that I have is a little bit of a correction.
All right.
I think that I was a little bit harsh on Survivor.
Okay. All right. We're back at it.
I think there's, you know, Jeff Probst rapping was a disaster. And
sure.
I think it's unforgivable. And I will, as I was editing that episode.
Yeah.
I heard myself say it,
yeah,
and I immediately was like, that didn't happen. I replayed the beginning of the episode to make sure. I had, so bad.
It really did happen.
It did.
Oh, my God.
But look, there's some really fun people on this season. I really enjoy a fair amount of this cast.
Yeah.
I love seeing Q again. He's great.
Yeah.
He is a chaotic player that his strategies are all over the place.
Sure.
No one would ever think to do the things he's doing. And I enjoy it. He's
has anybody
great.
Made any big moves? Has anybody come up with an overarching strategy and they're like, hey, we've got a whole thing and we're ready to take it on? Or is it all just kind of, is everybody kind of still doing eighth grade dance like we're waiting to find out who's partnering up kind of situation?
At the beginning, you know, we're only a couple episodes in.
Sure.
At the beginning, big moves are kind of hard to make.
Sure.
Because the stakes are really survival, make it to the merge.
Right.
The merge is really where
where the big moves happen.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
I think that's where you're going to find the impressive, flashy gameplay.
Gotcha.
But, you know, I think people it's all about restricting information.
Okay.
At the beginning.
All right.
Like there's in-group, out-group kind of
sure,
stuff.
Sure, sure. That's the beginning of the clicks.
Yeah. You want to have your numbers in the tribe. You
right.
know, like it's seven people, you want four.
Got it.
So, you know, choosing who you're giving information to and sharing stuff with and keeping things from, those are the moves that people make
all
at the beginning.
All right.
And I think there's some bold choices.
Okay.
But, like, not much.
Mm.
Not much.
Yeah.
Christian sent the Billie Eilish boomerang idol to Aubrey, which was a big choice. That's
okay.
a big move in theory.
Okay.
But it might not turn into anything.
Yeah, that's those idols really got to pay off. At least one of them has to pay off with the boomerang aspect. Otherwise, that's going to be really frustrating for
me.
Yeah. If none of them, if they all just get used like even just regular idols, that's still bullshit.
Yeah, there's no boomerang aspect to it, that it just hit a tree or
one
something.
One has to boomerang.
Although, I will say this. Okay, here's my positive.
Okay.
In the last episode, we learned that Mike White, the guy who made White Lotus and School of Rock,
yep.
he knows Ozzy from a restaurant in L.A.
That'll happen.
So, Ozzy, the king of the water, who is the best swimmer in Survivor history.
Right.
And also did some porno.
Sure.
He also owns a restaurant that Mike White has gone to Los Angeles, and they're friends from that.
Because Mike White is a Survivor super fan, so of course he was like, he owns a restaurant?
Yeah.
I'll go there?
Yeah.
All right.
So that's fun.
That is fun.
Anyway, what's your bright spot?
My bright spot is I discovered finally, after you having told me about them several times over the past few years, the live readings of Star Wars produced by the George Lucas Talk Show.
Well, yeah, sure.
Yes.
Connor's not in all of them.
Not in all of
Watto's
them.
Watto's not in all of them.
Does a pre-video for those who aren't aware of Connor. Now, Connor is in one heavily.
True.
He is in the Star Wars Holiday Special, and my friend, that is fucking dynamite.
Yeah.
I love that shit.
Yeah, his spirit is in all of them.
Yes, but, yes. Yeah. He is a main player in the Holiday Special, and no matter how many times I've seen it, I refuse to remember everything that happens in the holiday special.
It's pretty crazy.
I've seen it probably 10, maybe 12 times.
It's where we met Boba Fett.
Absolutely. Just, and I, and every time I'm like, well, this clearly didn't actually happen. Mm-hmm. This is like some sort of artifact that fell from a universe where Shazam, you know what I'm saying? Like, this has got to be a global hallucination because it can't be real.
Nope.
And it is.
It is.
It is uninterrupted, unsubtitled Wookiee speech for a long time.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, that's one of the fun things about it being a script reading.
Yeah.
Is like there's authorial intent that comes through.
Oh, is that what they were saying? How about that? I thought Itchy was just a grump.
Yeah. There's also, you know, there's some things that are like through lines of those live readings that are really fun. Like the person playing R2-D2, the beeps and boops.
JoJo Ginn, yeah.
So good.
She gets better over time. Yeah. It's clear that she like cares.
Yeah. But there's a thousand little fun things about those. Like Vic Michaelis is amazing.
Sure.
Everybody's great.
Matt Gourley is all across the board fantastic.
Yep.
Just truly great.
You could just tell that he was like, I really think I can nail this Trade Federation voice.
Yep. Yeah. Just there was a way to go and it was a bad way. And then there's another way to go and it's doing a Southern character and that is the correct way.
So now we have once again spoken so highly of something that the George Lucas talk show people are involved with and
never going to speak to us.
No.
What you going to do?
Oh, well, keep up the good work, guys.
Yep.
So, Jordan, today we have an episode to go over.
Ooh.
Alex is obviously having a tough time with the Iran war.
Sure.
And we'll see what's up with that.
All right.
But first, let's take a little moment to say hello to some new wonks.
Ooh, that's a great idea.
So first, a tiny doe. Thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, if it bleeds, we can make a supplement out of it. Thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
And I've been a secret wonk for 2 years, and I can't stay silent anymore. Haribo is pronounced quokka. Thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And we got a technocrat in the mix, Jordan. So thank you so much to Abracadabra Boom Shaka Day. I'm Dan Friesen, and I'm back like a vertebrae. I come with a hat full of tricks, trunk full of methylene blue, car full of documents. Thank you so much. You're now a technocrat.
I'm a policy wonk.
4 stars. Go home to your mother and tell her you're brilliant.
Someone sodomite sent me a bucket of poop.
Daddy Shark. Bom, 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 bom. Jar Jar Binks has a Caribbean black accent.
He's a loser little titty baby.
I don't want to hate black people. I renounce Jesus Christ.
Jar Jar Binks didn't have a Caribbean accent in the live reading, now, did he?
He did not. He did not. Wise to keep that away from him.
Yeah.
But man, Daffy Duck is a good voice.
It's true.
That's a good choice.
I read that technocrat name as if it was going to all rhyme, because the Shaka Day and vertebrae tricked me into thinking it all was going to have an A, B.
I believe it's a Juggalo reference.
Oh, whoop whoop.
Yes, whoop whoop. I believe we should be whoop whooping
that. I apologize if I didn't get that.
I didn't get it.
I don't like their music.
I'm not a big musical Juggalo fan. I'm more of a community guy.
Yeah.
No.
So, Jordan, Alex has been struggling in the present day.
True.
There's a lot of stuff that's happening, and the people he likes are doing things that are indefensible in terms of his ideology.
Sure.
And it pains me that we're going to have to keep talking about it.
Oh, my God! Oh, my God! What's that? Oh, my God! Is that the past? Oh, my God!
It's the past. We're going to the past.
All right. Thank God.
Yeah. We're going to be talking about 316, March 16th, 2006.
All right.
Stone Cold Steve Austin Day in the past.
Yes.
And get this.
What?
This episode is coming out on 316, 2026, the 20th anniversary of the episode that we're listening to on this show. And that's why I did the glass
break. Well, you got it. Yeah, absolutely. It's worth it. It's worth the pageantry.
Layers.
Yeah. 20 years.
Yep.
Same day. Like if you were folding time, this would be the moment where the things touch.
Yeah.
Maybe this.
Oh, my God.
No!
The things have touched.
I wonder if we were doing a bad movie, this would be the moment where we like transport ourselves back into a what is it? 13 going on 30 situation. Is that what I'm doing?
Oh my God.
It's a 13 going on 30 situation.
They have created a singularity. Oh my God. This is a time paradox.
Oh man, I gotta be Jamie Lee Curtis in this one, I think.
I'll be Jim Ross.
Okay.
So we're back on in 2006.
Sure.
316.
All right.
And we've been dealing with a fair amount of Slobodan Milosevic.
We've had, yeah.
In the past.
Yep.
And I will tell you that this episode has nothing to do with
it's
him.
It's a Fastodon Milosevic.
Yes, we are Pastodon Milosevic.
All right, nice.
But we do start with a clip of Alex saying something that he would not want to take responsibility for in the present.
Uh-oh.
Belarus says U.S. planned school bombings on Election Day. Are we to believe this? The Russians wrote the modern book on doing this, and so... would the United States be involved in a bombing? Yes, certainly, to blame it on enemies, but Russia likes to do it too. The Belarusians, I guess you could call them, have been known to do it. I mean, who doesn't really? So we'll have to research this, and hindsight normally will let us learn if it's the case, but we're not sure right now, but I will get into this article out of Moscow News.
So, yeah, the Russians, they like to false flag bomb stuff.
Yeah.
That wasn't supposed to be happening in 2006.
I do appreciate the hindsight normally allows us to do something, because that's a loaded concept. The hindsight in 2006, and now we're in that. Like, what, in hindsight, doesn't do shit.
No, it turns out it doesn't.
Yeah, it's very useless.
No, it allows you to look at this and be like, huh.
How about that?
Yeah, you're lying.
What about that hindsight?
So I thought, like, okay, that's cool. That's certainly a different take than Alex has in the present day.
Sure.
Let's hear about some more geopolitics.
Yeah, I like it.
But instead, Alex gets real local.
Okay.
And wants to talk about a band.
Well, today's broadcast is going to be a little bit different. We'll cover all the normal staples: government-sponsored terror, the New World Order, the Satanic Elite, the real world that surrounds us. But Cruiserweight, who I'm a big fan of, I played part of one of their songs yesterday, won a big award at the Austin Awards last night. And I'd incidentally gotten some complaints that I hadn't aired the whole thing by listeners. So we'll play the whole song later in this hour that I never got to yesterday. We just played about 2 minutes of it. And also, you'll get my review of the dystopic science fiction Philip K. Dick novel.
Yes.
For the first time made into a full-length feature, rotoscoped Hollywood production up on the big silver screen. I had a chance to go watch it last night at a sneak peek. Well, it won't be out till July.
Ooh.
And I was just blown away. I mean, it is avant-garde. What is avant-garde? New. Something new. Before its time.
Oh, so now we know what avant-garde means when Alex calls all the Nazis that.
Yeah.
So that's good to before keep in our back pocket.
Before their time. Coming. Mm-hmm. Coming down the pipeline is another way of saying
I'm helping them down the pipeline.
Yeah.
So there's absolutely zero chance that Alex likes this band, Cruiserweight. They're a local Austin standout pop-punk band that's won the Austin Award in that category for the past few years. They're in that mid-2000s sweet spot where they're wildly successful but also obscure, where they've had songs in video games and open for bands like Newfound Glory, but they aren't Newfound Glory.
Right.
They put out an album in 2005 called Silent Weaponry, which I think could be a reference to Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars,
right,
the fake document that Bill Cooper published in Behold a Pale Horse, and Alex has also treated as real.
Right.
The song Alex is going to play is called Operation Eyes Shut, which does have some early 2000s InfoWars vibes. So while I don't think that Alex is into this pop punk band, I wouldn't be surprised if their manager reached out to him and wanted him to play the song.
Right, like, right.
I could see that connection being made, but
right.
He's not out there checking out the pop punk scene.
And I'll say this, I don't think there are a lot of pop punk people going to the bunkers where the fans of Alex Jones at this time might be living.
Playing house shows in redoubts.
Man, those were the days when you would have to go about 20, 30 feet underground to play a house show.
Yeah.
With all those little bunk beds.
There's a bar of MREs.
Foods. Yeah, absolutely.
Would you like a cocktail of
who wants
beans?
To buy merch?
It's also strange to hear Alex talking about A Scanner Darkly and not immediately mentioning that he's in
that
it.
He's in it. Why did he get to see a sneak peek of it? Is it because there was a sneak peek available, or is it because maybe he was in some way associated with the fucking film?
I mean, it is going to come up, but it was shocking to me that it doesn't come up immediately.
Right.
But pretty close to immediately.
Oh my God.
It's got government-sponsored care in it. If you closely follow what's happening, the government, in conjunction with private corporations, ships in the drugs. The police state is a mechanized control grid to control the population. And basically, it is put out by Warner Independent, and behind the scenes, it's been quite a task to get this through. But it is definitely anti-New World Order. It's got some of the biggest stars in Hollywood in it. And believe me, they're anti-New World Order. It's a labor of love. You know, Keanu Reeves makes around $50 million for his movies. He made $200 million on his last two Matrix films. And he made, what does it say he made? He was paid $70,000 to make this film for people that shoot their mouths off and go, oh, it's Hollywood establishment. Yeah. This film would normally cost about $80 million to make conservatively. You can go read major industry publications that are reporting that. It was made for $8.9 million with an original budget of $6.9 million. Anyways, that my big review of it, and of course I haven't really mentioned or talked about in the last review we did, and then I'd only seen it in the studio there on the TV screen, parts of it. My first review didn't even mention that I'm in the film or consulted on the film, and I'm just so honored that I was able to be part of this film, that my friend Rick Linkletter called me and included me in it, and that the producer, Tommy Pallotta, did, and, of course, one of the other producers is George Clooney, who we know is anti-New World Order.
Okay. So Alex is trying to sound like he basically co-directed this movie, which he really just had a cameo in it. In 2017, Vice interviewed Richard Linklater about how he feels about having worked with Alex, which never happened again after A Scanner Darkly.
Weird.
His response, quote, Alex was just this guy on public access TV. I liked his energy, but he was kind of a joke. I got to know him a little bit because he was in Waking Life and Scanner, doing some weird version of himself in both cases. He's not really an actor, so I haven't really talked to him since the Obama years. I guess there's a part of me now that's surprised because he never really seemed like that to me. I can't say he's not a good manipulator. I can't say I've really known him all these years. Really bizarre. He's asked about how he first met Alex, and he says, quote, on Waking Life, he came in, had seen my movie Slacker. We started talking about a part, so I worked up a little part for him. He was more fun when it was the Bush era, put it like that. When he was anti that, I was like, yeah. And then I was like, oh, you're just anti everybody. But then he's pro somebody for the first time, which is like, big choice, Alex. We'll see how that shakes out long term.
Ooh, hindsight.
I haven't spoke to him in years, though.
Hindsight is, ooh.
In that and other interviews, Linklater makes clear that Alex was someone who was known in Austin and they all laughed at. He was funny, not somebody to be taken seriously who was an important consultant in Linklater's films. Ethan Hawke is an important collaborator with Linklater throughout his career creatively. Alex is not. Also, it's funny to hear that Alex thinks that George Clooney is anti-New World Order at this point because he becomes a huge globalist later.
Yeah.
And I did, I was telling you, I just watched Hail Caesar.
Yeah.
And it's funny because George Clooney is a communist.
Yeah.
Or he becomes seduced by the communists in that. And it's funny to think what Alex would, his take on that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of shifting allegiances in the past 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
That Linklater, he was more fun of the Bush years is maybe the best way of describing it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as long as he's in a contained place, it's if you have stuff in a box and you don't let Pandora near it, it's a perfectly serviceable box.
Yeah, it's easier to be tricked back then. And
yeah.
He tricked people, and it was fun.
Shouldn't have let it open.
Mm-mm.
Gotta keep that box closed, my man.
Yep. So Alex is hitting on all the major, important, very serious issues of the day.
Sure.
Like an episode of Boston Legal.
Hell yeah.
Boston Legal has put out a lot of pro-New World Order stuff in the past, and what they're having to do now is put out some anti-New World Order stuff or lose all credibility. That's what TV's having to do. 24
it's
does it. Other
Boston
TV
Legal
shows do it.
You lose all credibility.
There's a lot of the writers and
Shatner
productions. They're not bad people themselves. They're just told this is the angle we want. This is what the quote advertisers want. This is what we're doing. And I've talked to a lot of these people. They want to tell the truth. They want to get the word out. And so more and more of it is slipping out. And here's a little 5-minute piece from Boston Legal that
5 minutes of Boston Legal
socialist twist at the end, which is part of the false paradigm. So let's roll that. Here it is.
Not counting commercials. Wait, is it an hour-long show or a half hour?
I feel like it was a half hour.
I don't know. If it was an hour, then maybe it's less percentage of the whole show.
Right.
But Alex is playing like a scene.
Yeah, it's basically a quarter.
It's
crazy. Yeah. Man.
I think it's crazy how focused on pop culture he is in this episode in particular. Like, everything is a movie, this band Cruiserweight.
Yeah.
Boston Legal is, it seems so trivial.
If it were possible, and you know what? Maybe we're thinking of it the wrong way. Maybe this is a problem of focus. Maybe if we all focused hard enough on Boston Legal, that would be the domino that sets the rest of... The problem is we're focusing on too many different shows. Some people are on Boston Legal, some people on a cooking show, other people... You know, like if it's all about the legal.
But if you make Boston Legal the most anti-New World Order show in the world, perfect, according to Alex, he's just going to start complaining about another procedural.
Yeah, that is true.
It's just going to be like, oh, Law and Order sucks.
It's almost like he prefers the complaining to the show.
Yeah.
It's almost like maybe he doesn't even watch Boston Legal.
Let's imagine that.
Yeah.
He's a big Boston Legal guy. You hate the law, and you hate Boston.
He owns every one of Shatner's spoken words albums.
Fucking insane.
Yeah, it is crazy.
So anyway, let's get to some substance.
All right.
What's Bush up to?
What is Bush up to?
And there's a really scary report here where Bush signed a bill that hadn't been passed. Not only is Bush saying that if you don't pass a law like the Patriot Act expansion, I will just enforce it without having a law. That's called lawlessness. And when a leader engages in lawlessness, it's called despotism. It's called a tyrant, tyranny. A tyrant carries out a tyranny. They carry it out upon the population, the serfs, the slaves. And we've got him at these signing ceremonies where he signs bills and then says, well, the bill says this, but I'm ordering the executive with my statement, speaking like Zeus or like Ramses or something.
By decree,
Nebuchadnezzar, that he is just going to, this is what we're actually going to do with this. And there's lawyers there all writing it down.
Boston Legal lawyers.
Mm.
So all of this is pretty clear. Bush is a despot for doing a thing, and Trump is a great leader for doing the same thing. Alex was pretty concerned with executive power in 2006, which looks a little silly in hindsight.
Yep.
This situation with Bush signing a bill that hadn't passed isn't exactly like what it sounds like in Alex's telling of it, but it is a bit of a mess. This has to do with the Deficit Reduction Act of 2005, which passed in both the House and Senate and then was signed into law by Bush. However, Democratic Representative Henry Waxman later pointed out that the version of the bill that was passed in the House was different from the one that was passed in the Senate. The Senate had passed a version of the bill that only required Medicare to pay for patients to have access to medical equipment for 13 months, as opposed to the House version that had it at 36 months. Waxman essentially argued that the House had debated and were prepared to vote on what they believed was a version of the bill that offered patients more Medicare benefits, and then at the last minute the bill was changed to match the Senate version. It's not so much an allegation that Bush is signing non-existent bills, it's more that a Democratic representative is accusing the GOP-controlled Congress of not following the rules about altering bills before votes. So, I think Alex doesn't know the difference, or care. He's just skimming a headline.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting. It's so interesting, the idea of, like, should they have treated it with the same urgency that Alex is lying that they should treat it with? Do you know what I mean? Like, in terms of the Republicans are breaking the rules of Congress, like, maybe we should have treated that like that is Trump. Mm-hmm. Right now. Do you know what I mean? Like, if we overreacted early, would that have kept us from being where we are right now?
Well, lawsuits, you know what I mean? Lawsuits were filed over this.
Right.
And, like, I don't know if it was actually changed.
Right.
Like right before the like, vote or whatever on it.
Right.
This is what Waxman is alleging.
Right.
But But I don't know from, like, if it was, in fact, a sweep, like,
sure.
Then, yeah, maybe they should. Right. Maybe you should have treated it with the urgency.
Right.
But if that's not the case, then it is just someone making the allegation that this was
true.
Wrong.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you act with the urgency and it is overhyped, then you make a mistake.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I suppose tactically then what should have happened, or like maybe what would have been most effective, is when they caught him on a thing, like a real thing that they got him dead to rights, they just way overkill it. You know, like just go so far overboard because, hey, I got you, mm-hmm. You know? There's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah.
Right?
No, I think, you know, and here, the point that I'll agree with is the, you know, like, you know, what Alex even said in 2006 is that if you don't punish the executive, then you end up deteriorating what is allowed to be done without punishment.
Right.
I agree with that. The issue when you say, like, over respond to things when you're dead to rights.
Right.
I think that what we've seen is that people will make it appear that somebody is dead to rights to something in order to get you to have that overreaction.
Sure.
So once you set the standard of this is what will cause the overreaction,
sure.
People will change like what it means to be dead to rights.
They do like to lie about stuff.
Yeah.
I have known that with people.
So that gets dangerous.
They like to try and manipulate things to get their way.
Yeah.
That's crazy how that works.
I don't know what the right answer is, even about 2006.
It would be easy in hindsight if it were easy in the present.
Sure.
Yeah.
So you know what is clear, though? Like, I mean, we can all agree on this.
Yeah.
Posers suck.
They do suck.
Fuck posers.
Agreed.
Everybody out there posing.
But stop posing.
Stop posing.
We didn't stop it.
Alex,
we didn't stop them.
Alex is not a poser.
Oh.
I mean, frankly, I look down on people that are not genuine to begin with. I'm not a poser. I don't
he
have
poses.
Time to pose. I'm so
he
sick
says
of
posingly.
Posers and all their ilk. Posers aren't just posing for the public. They're posing for themselves, their own little mental vision of themselves.
He says into a mirror.
I'm digressing here. I just can't handle it anymore. It's everything is getting so nuts. It's getting crazier and crazier and crazier and crazier and crazier and crazier and crazier. And I know they're doing it on purpose to wear us out. That's why they'll announce they're going to attack Iran this month for sure, and they won't do it for 6 months a year, probably next March. It's like Iraq. They just psychopaths do the same thing over and over again. They know that just about hearing, we're going to attack. A lot of us at a sick level in our own subconscious psyches, we're now expecting it. Okay, get it over with. You know, I've been here for a year hearing about this, and so I expect it to happen. So when it happens at a subconscious level, we're going to want it to happen. Just because they've built up the suspense. And they play us like a fiddle.
Poser.
They play us like a fiddle, he says, echoing throughout time.
it's weird. No, it's not. It's the opposite of weird.
Yeah. That is what we expect. That is exactly what is expected. That is why we are here, because he could say that and people would go, that sounds right.
Right. It's why Linklater would cast him in his movies. It's because this sounds good. These fucking posers.
No, this guy sounds good. He is posing. That is the problem.
Yep.
It's the ultimate bluff. It's the poser bluff. I hate posers, he says posingly. Like, it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Oh, these evil people, they're going to attack Iran.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk myself into... So Alex complains some more about the posers.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think what he's talking about is posers.
Ooh.
I think what he's talking about is people who take on an identity that has to do with, like, cultural groups.
Right.
Like, maybe you're into rock. Like, or maybe you're into rap.
Like, anybody who's not into whiteness is posing by pretending to be into rap or hip-hop or something, when in reality, you should be into being white.
That's kind of what it feels like.
Okay.
And I'm dumbfounded. I am thunderstruck. I am... feel like I've been hit by a bolt of lightning. I mean, it just... I'm living... on the dark side of the moon or something.
A lot of song titles.
And I see the mind control zombies everywhere. Really, the telltale sign is the pose, is what I call it. You see these people, these adults. You got the cowboy type and the hippie type and the yuppie type and the trendy types and all the other types. And they're all like dress up, like, you know, little six-year-olds like to dress up like pirates or dress up like astronauts and, you know, or army or cowboys and Indians. And you go out in the backyard and you're in an imaginary world. And I've caught myself in years past when I was a kid doing this, and I figured out, hey, that's not the real world. You know, I mean, we propagandize ourselves. You know, we rationalize bad things we do. That's posing. When you rationalize something, you're lying to yourself so much of that. And I just see it. Mesmerized populations who've taken on false identities that the media hung out. You know, the media puts out a buffet of lies for you, and all these different selections and all these different flavors and all these different ideas. And they lay them out there for you. Like, and they hope you come and select one of the identities they've put out for you through television, through the sitcoms, the dramas, the theater, because we are social creatures. We emulate the leaders. We idolize. We fashion ourselves after someone. You're supposed to fashion yourself after your father, your mother, your aunt, your uncle. You're supposed to fashion yourself after heroes that have fought against overwhelming odds. That was the classical heroes. The old man who works his whole life to provide for his
white old man.
Parents died. You know, that's the heroes. That's what you're supposed to fashion yourself after. Not some gang memberish, giggling,
non-white person.
Some movie with their punked out clothes hanging down around their ankles. Not some punked out population that just thinks that it's all just pick some genre that you're going to be part of, and then go out there and emulate it. And then you're never really truly alive. And you talk to these people who are posing, and they aren't even alive. They aren't even real. And I'm sick of it. I want people to begin by realizing that they're lying to themselves.
That would be good, Alex. That would be a nice little start. So there's obviously like some kind of racial component to this.
Feels like it.
It seems to veer into like, why are your pants sagging?
Yep, feels very. The black youths are up to a thing again.
That's some of the territory that this is in. But then even beyond that, it also has the same feeling as like that. Like, you rural people out there going to a rodeo.
Yeah.
Just let people enjoy their lives, Alex.
I also, so are all of those things poses? Like, the idea of a
cowboy,
poser.
A hippie?
Right. But, like, the poser is the person who goes to the group under false pretenses. They are not that person. They're lying to get into the group.
But there are real hippies.
But there have to be real hippies for that group to exist. Otherwise, it's a group of posers, in which case they all belong there together.
Yeah, it then becomes an authentic group.
Exactly.
Just of a second order.
Yeah. So in reality, what Alex is describing is he doesn't like people who aren't exactly him. And his problem with him is he doesn't like them.
He doesn't like groups that aren't homogenous.
Yeah. Mm. Very specifically.
People who don't belong in those groups going into those groups.
Conservatively homogenous groups. And when the sun goes down, let's not worry about it.
I do like how he can see that, like, someone taking on the persona of a hippie or a cowboy, that kind of stuff, like, hey, you're doing that falsely.
Yeah.
But he doesn't see, like, crusader against the New World Order guy who gets visions from God as being, like, an identity that he takes on posingly.
I mean, hey, you could even take it a little bit step back and just go, he's posing as Rush Limbaugh for a good long time.
He's posing as like a country boy who can skin a buck and run a trot line and do his little wah wah voice.
Yep.
Yeah, it's all fucking posing.
Yeah, he's a poser.
So he is, but one thing he's not is a Bible thumper.
Pause.
I know what you call a Bible thumper. I'm not really a Pharisee. I don't get around telling everybody about the beams in their own eye because I got plenty of beams of my own. But I do love God, and I'm a Christian. I don't hide that. But this is a news program. But all over the country, we have had Christians being arrested for their speech, arrested for protesting, arrested for demonstrating, not even outside abortion clinics, but just out on the streets of major American cities. And we've had liberals getting arrested with a T-shirt saying, I'm against the war, and there's 500 unpermitted pro-Bush people, but the the demonstrator that's anti-Bush goes to jail.
This isn't a true description of Alex, but it's exactly what he needs people to believe he is in order for his shit to have any chance of success. Alex isn't just a Bible thumper. He's an extreme right-wing Christian fundamentalist. He wants to use the allure of conservative politics and pretending to be interested in the Constitution as a Trojan horse to evangelize to the audience about his very bizarre and white identity-laden version of Christianity, which he wants to be the organizing principle of the world. He believes that the devil is running the globalists, and the only way to defeat them is if the U.S. effectively becomes a theocracy where the secular laws are based on his religious beliefs. That's what he's evolved into, and if he were the person he claims to be here in 2006, he would have no interest in becoming what he's become. If this were a sincere description of his agenda and who he is, then Alex would have resisted the call to become a demagogue that he's become, quite clearly, because he would have known that there was a plank in his own eye and that he was an imperfect person. Yeah. He wouldn't become this.
Yeah.
It's so important at this point in his career to pretend that he gives a shit about the anti-Bush protesters on the left, because if he isn't able to trick them into thinking that he's on their side, then his show is dead in the water. He's destined to just be another Bill Cooper, who has an impact on the underground culture, but he never gets rich or influential in a way that he gets to enjoy before he dies. The stuff with Linklater is a perfect encapsulation of that. If Linklater understood who Alex was and what he was about, he never would have cast him in either of those movies, and Alex definitely knows that. It's why Linklater said, I can't say he's not a good manipulator, because he was manipulating people into thinking that he's funny and like, oh yeah, harmless, kind of goofy, dumb shit yelling when he's actually Trojan horsing really extreme politics.
Yep. And if you don't fall for that form of manipulation where he's fun and interesting, he'll go on a show and say he'll gut you like a pig in a different form of manipulation that'll somehow get you to invite him back on your show, where suddenly you'll be manipulated again into thinking that he's a very funny and fun friend to be around.
And then your hippie friend will interview him later.
And then Duncan will fucking show up like an asshole.
Speaking of which, I want to correct something slightly from that Duncan Trussell episode.
Yeah.
I mentioned that Daria emailed us.
Yeah.
I think I got the year wrong on that.
Yeah.
I think it was brought to my attention that that might have been earlier than... years blur together.
Yeah,
I didn't want to give people the impression that there was like...
It wasn't like a week after we started.
No, but it was earlier than it should have
been. It was way earlier than it should have been.
Yeah.
And it would have been enough to fuck us up.
Yep. So Alex, when he's saying this stuff about he's not a Bible thumper, he's not...
Sure.
It's in service...
He's lying. When he's lying about these things...
Oh, yes, it is a lie. But it is also in service of leading up to a guest that he's going to have.
Gotcha.
Which is a dude who got fired from his radio show because he criticized Israel.
Uh-oh.
And I predict that our guest that we've got on with us right now is going to be blessed after he's been punished for free speech. And I don't attack Israel. You know, I get criticized for not even being neutral on it, but just saying, you know, that, well, I mean, Israel could have a state if it wasn't so anti-Christian and anti-Muslim and anti-Jew. I mean, it's atheist. The labor Zionist funded Hitler. That's now public. So I get criticized for not bashing Israel. But Christian radio host fired for criticizing Israel, 20-year host Dale Crowley with high ratings, told you can't talk about that. Michael Collins Piper, American Free Press, the un-American thought police operating on American soil, have struck once again. This time, their victim is veteran Christian evangelist Dale Crowley, Jr.
So Alex's guest is this guy named Dale Crowley, and he wasn't fired for talking about Israel. He had a show called Focus on Israel, which the station was no longer interested in airing. It wasn't like he was a normal old Christian talk show host who one day decided he was going to start complaining about Israel, and then the station shut him down.
Right.
It was more of a thing where his show isn't what they wanted to air anymore.
Yeah.
And honestly, he brings up, like, they talk to him and he's like, I wasn't getting paid anything for it. It's like a local radio show. It's like public access.
So they just were like, hey, don't show up anymore.
Yeah.
You're fine.
You are getting a little bit weird.
And they were like, we didn't even pay your gas to get here. We're saving you money by keeping you from coming to the radio station.
It's like volunteer community radio. And Alex is acting like, oh, it's the highest rated thing in the world. It might as well be like on Salem or Westwood One or whatever. Like, come on.
I like the idea of not knowing the difference between talking about Israel and having a show called Focus on Israel.
I even think like that name could exist in a benign place, but we're going to hear some things that this guy has to say, and yeah. I think that you get a pretty good sense of why you might not air his shit.
Yeah.
So certain people are really invested in pushing the narrative as if you were fired because he dared to criticize Israel, and those people are Nazis. Alex is reading a story about this from the American Free Press, which is a flagrantly anti-Semitic outlet founded by white supremacist Willis Cardo. The writer of the piece Alex is reading is Michael Collins Piper, who is the former editor for the Liberty Lobby and has a deep history of anti-Semitic slop. That said, Dale Crowley's not just a guy who criticized Israel either. He definitely was someone who engaged in a fair amount of anti-Semitic content and viewed America as a country for Christians. So it makes sense that the American Free Press folks would want to make the most out of him getting dropped by his station, except he didn't even get dropped by the station. He had a 15-minute show that he did on Saturdays. And then a weekly weekday show. They were fine with his weekday show.
Yeah.
It's just the Saturday one. They're like,
the title being Focus on Israel.
That one is.
That one specifically.
You might be going a little bit far with this one.
Right.
We're not interested in that.
Maybe just don't put it on the radio.
Show. Yeah. And then they also were like, you can air your show. You just got to record it in advance. We're just not letting you on a live mic.
Wild.
Yeah.
Wild. So they have gone out of their way beyond what anybody would consider reasonable to keep this guy on the air because spewing bullshit.
Because he's done a local access public community radio show forever.
Yeah.
Let's not kick the old man out. Let's give him an option.
Oh, he's a Nazi. What old man isn't a Nazi?
A Nazi is fine if you're not on a live mic.
We can work with that.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I do appreciate those, like... when you can just sense that those guys back in the day would be like, what? I hear something in the world out there. There's something I can lie about. Mm-hmm. What? Is that it? I can work with this.
Yeah.
15 minutes? Oh, this guy was the crusader of justice and peace.
He was just a normal, great kind of guy, Christian. Like, he just wanted what's best for everyone. And then he dared to question Israel.
Ooh.
And then they fired him for it. And
if you have the courage to question things.
Right.
Yep.
The reason that that story is incredibly appealing to these folks like the American Free Press in the past is they want to appear like they're just questioning Israel.
Right.
And being critical of the government and shit.
Right.
When they are, in fact, anti-Semitic Nazis.
Right. And they've also probably got some stuff where they've probably been fired from a bunch of jobs for
the
exact same reason.
Well, I'm sure there's some bitterness.
Yeah, I bet there's a lot of bitterness among them.
Yeah, they're angry, for sure.
Yep.
So Alex, in the present day, has really been trying to pretend that, like, hey, Israel, AIPAC, that kind of stuff, it never really was that big of a deal for me. But now it is.
Yeah.
Because they have co-opted Trump's administration.
I've changed.
Right.
Yes.
Except,
wow,
he seems to be saying a lot of the same shit in 2006.
I don't know what triggered this decision. It could have been the White House, Homeland Security. I've been opposed to this Israel's war against Iraq for over 3 years now, before it began. The Federal Communications Commission might have been pressured to talk about anti-Semitism and hate speech, which the program is not. I'm not a hateful person. I've broadcast 1,000 broadcasts of the Focus on Israel. It's a Bible study program. I close every broadcast with Romans 10:1. My heart's desire and prayer to God for Israel is that Israel will be saved.
And the AIPAC people have got it banned in Israel to say that we want Jews to come to Jesus.
Yes.
And so now, buddy, you can't say it in Washington.
Well,
pretty soon it will be greater Israel here.
Well, that's exactly right. I've been coasting along here for 20 years. I thought I was untouchable. I thought if they left me alone for 20 years telling the truth on the subject...
You're a canary in the coal mine, buddy. We're in the 11th hour, Pastor.
What the fuck are you talking about? You're not supposed to believe this in 2006.
We're just going to be part of Greater Israel.
What?
Wow.
Yeah.
That happened fast. Ugh. Because this guy doesn't get to spend 15 minutes on a live mic?
Mm-hmm.
Are you saying that because he has to pre-record That means we're about to become Greater Israel.
Well, it's evidence that this is a Zog.
Well,
you know?
I mean, he is the canary in the coal mine.
Yeah.
A very, very specific, small canary in a non-existent coal mine.
It's time to pray.
It is time to pray.
Yeah, I think that this is, he shouldn't have these takes in 2006 if the way that he's acting in 2026 was sincere.
Yeah.
But it's not.
No.
It's all bullshit.
Yeah.
And that's cool.
Yeah, I imagine if we really like went down and diagrammed it day by day, there would be a corresponding ebb and flow to that goes along with how far the furthest right is, you know, like as they ebb and flow about who's the most or whatever. He's maybe two steps below that, but in the same kind of wavelength.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. And I think as it relates to Israel, it's his criticisms, I think, I don't know if they're ever valid.
Right.
But I think that Alex knows well enough that at this point in history, in around 2006, the only relevant people who were talking about Zogs and the Israeli influence on the government are Nazis.
Yeah.
The people who are there are people who are making valid points about the Israeli government, even in this time.
Yeah.
But they are not super culturally relevant.
Right.
The people who are the loudest are the people who are like maybe getting guns together and talking about how the U.S. is going to be Greater Israel.
Yeah.
He knows that.
Yeah.
And he knew that then. He was signaling to those people because he wanted them to be part of his audience in 2006. In 2026, he also still knows this.
Wow.
So he doesn't want to take responsibility for being involved in that world in the past that he knows was so dominated by Nazis and religious zealots.
Right. Well, because then he would have to admit that he's partially responsible for us being here in the first place. So there's really no reason for him to fake any kind of bullshit anyways and just be like, ha-ha, I did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like, I think that it's obviously, like, it is not fundamentally anti-Semitic to disagree with the state of Israel.
Right.
It's not anti-Semitic, but it does seem to attract a lot of anti-Semitic folks.
Right.
So you should take people based on how they sound. What are your complaints?
Sure.
How are you articulating these things? And I don't think these guys sound like anti-Semites at all.
All you're trying to do is, I guess, continue what Jesus and, of course, people like up on the mountain, Moses said.
Well, that's exactly right. And Jesus got in trouble. My Habib Sheber said to me many times, if Jesus had dealt with the Jews of his day like Jerry Falwell deals with the Jews today, he never would have been crucified.
Oh, boy.
So
that's no good.
We're right where we were in New Testament times, Alex.
Well, that's what it's all about. It's about a bunch of Satanists in control, and Jesus trying to overturn it. It's the same thing today. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
So that sounds bad.
So if I understand correctly, if Jesus had oppressed and subjugated the Jews, well, that would have done it.
I don't think that this comes off as anything other than anti-Semitic.
Yeah, that's pretty anti-Semitic.
It has not much to do with governmental criticisms, even cultural criticisms, largely.
Yeah.
He is using Satanists as a proxy for Jews.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's what that's the American Free Press might like. Anyway, Dale sucks.
Yep.
What has happened to Christians in America? What's happened to Christendom?
A lot of it, Alex, is a consequence of Scofield dispensationalism.
I'm
when
sorry?
Scofield wrote his notes, he did his best to exalt Israel, put Israel first. He even put Israel above the church. Read his notes in the New Testament. Many times he denigrates the church, the body of Christ, and exalts Israel. He never has anything bad to say. And this Scofield Bible, this Scofield dispensationalism, has influenced the Church of Jesus Christ around the world to exalt Israel above even the church, the body of Jesus Christ.
Well, I mean, let me just say something here that's important. 5-6 years ago, I wouldn't bash Israel. I'd say leave Israel alone, nothing against Israel. I knew that Israel had been involved in a lot of bad things, but, you know, all these countries are corrupt. But if I didn't worship everything they did, like selling nuclear weapons components to Iran or selling our missile secrets and F-16 fighter secrets to communist China, I would get a call up going, my guest I'd had on, you listen to me, Alex, you're going to go to hell if you criticize anything they do. And I go, and I went, wait a minute, I don't claim to be a Bible expert, but I sat through a lot of Bible study when I was, you know, in Sunday school. Every prophet came and criticized, and God would judge Israel with foreign nations in captivity, and Jesus criticized what Israel was doing, and I mean, isn't that the, I don't understand what you're saying. They're like, you don't say a word, you worship Israel. So really, we don't worship Jesus Christ, we worship Israel now.
Yeah, it's the God's chosen people myth, and as I say, it came out of Scofield dispensationalism.
This is very out of sync with how Alex has tried to present his views on Israel in the present day. He tries to act like his concerns about Israel are new, but it seems like he had the same awareness and complaints in 2006 and is even engaging in the same rhetoric.
Yeah.
Like, 5 years ago, I didn't complain about them, but now I'm going to.
Yeah, almost like some sort of holy war.
Almost like some sort of broken record,
too.
Huh. It's crazy.
Strange.
So without getting too into the weeds, Scofield dispensationalism is a reference to the debate among Christian thinkers about how many dispensations there have been in the history of God's people. Basically, it's a discussion of whether there's been 3 or 7 different status quos in terms of God's relationship with man.
Sure.
The dispensationalist school of thought grew massively in the early to mid-1900s and has an outsized influence on evangelical churches, the burgeoning megachurch movement, and a lot of the end times Christian folks like Jim Baker.
Sure.
Scofield had commentaries on, like, Revelation and a lot of the people who have, like, ideas about, like, fun prophecy.
Yeah.
They come from a reading that has some reliance on Scofield.
Gotcha.
In the last few decades, the school of thought has lost a bit of steam to the more covenant-based thinkers.
Sure.
And if you want to make it hyper simple, dispensationalists believe in a pre-trib rapture, whereas folks like Alex and Dale believe in a post-trib rapture. Dispensationalists believe that the Jews play an important role in the events that lead to the end times, whereas folks like Alex and Dale believe that this is making Christianity secondary to Judaism, where the fulfillment of their prophecy can't happen without the Jews making it happen, and that bothers them.
Right.
So that's a big part of, like, what's behind this schism that Dale is talking about and what it means in terms of their actual belief.
Yeah. You know, it brings something to mind, which is that I've never been in a situation where somebody's had, like, a proper name and then the Bible and not had a really bad time afterwards.
Especially if it's not New Standard or King James.
Yeah,
like, those, like, at least are, like,
Derek's Bible. I'm like, I am not going to have a good time. I don't want to talk to Derek about his
Derek's
Bible.
Weird.
I don't want to know what's going on in Derek's Bible. Oh, Scofield's dispensation. I'm getting out of here. I'm getting out of here. You guys have fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't need any names in front of Bible.
I think that like, scholarly conversation and shit about, like, hey, this is a tradition and, you know, this is, yeah,
sure,
blah, blah, blah.
Sure. Right.
If you are angry about Scofield's dispensationalism,
no good. If you've got elbow patches and a pipe, have fun.
Yes.
Go delight in yourself. If you've got a gun, go home.
Yeah.
Do not.
Yeah. So I think that Alex, I don't know. It's weird.
It is weird.
He, in a recent episode, I believe it was our last episode, Alex discussed the possibility that Jared Kushner is the Antichrist.
Yes.
And how a lot of people are trying to force God's hand.
Sure.
And bring it about the end times.
It would be interesting if that's how it worked.
Now, 20 years ago, Alex knew that this was impossible.
Okay.
Scofield is dangerous. It's insidious. And it is weakened. And the church.
Well, didn't he come up with the whole rapture thing?
Well, this is all related to Israel. He said, if we help the Jews get back to Palestine, then we can hasten the coming of Christ and the rapture will take place and remove us all.
Yeah, that's right. Man can make God do things.
That's right. My friend Grace Halsell called it Forcing God's Hand. She wrote a book, and that was the title of the book. Many of your listeners have it, I'm sure. Forcing God's Hand. Making God... hurry something up that we want to see hurried up.
Well, that's what the devil did that got him thrown out of heaven.
Is it?
True.
True.
Is that what the devil did?
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that.
But yeah, Alex seems to be coming from a place that you can't do that.
Can't do that.
You can't force God to do something.
I mean, it would definitely change, I think, a lot of people's fundamental relationship with God if they knew that, like, as long as enough of us get together, that dude can't do shit to us, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, fucking, oh, you want to wait a couple of years? Surprise, tomorrow!
Yeah, but, like, if you look at the way that Alex is engaged with it in the present and a lot of, like, you know, the implications of things he says. You don't even need to get a group of people together. No. One person could subvert God.
Feels very easy. Yes. Feels very simple at this point in time.
God has to always be playing defense against us.
It is a very strange point of view to have on God.
Yeah.
Of like, hey, don't be stupid. Of course we can get him to do shit.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
That's not cool.
Mm.
Anyway, some Jews are not Jews, apparently.
That's always a good start to a conversation.
Yeah.
What makes me mad is I never even criticize Israel, and then I criticize 9/11, and the ADL attacks me.
Yeah.
I mean, they want a fight. They want to claim they represent all Jews, and they don't.
They don't, no.
You know, all the Jewish people I know who are my friends are great people, and then you sit there and you see these folks from Khazaria, these European folks, they're not even really Jews to begin with.
Ashkenazi Jews, yeah.
Yeah, and they're busy microwaving the Sephardi Jews and
about
killing all those Jewish kids. And I'm bad because I don't want them to kill Jewish children.
So this is about the criticisms of Israel.
I feel like we've gone a little off track here.
Yeah.
I think this is no good.
I think I'm getting a sense of why this guy, you wouldn't want him on a live mic. Alex and Dale. You don't want to know.
Yeah, I was going to say, talking about Israel, I'm already uncomfortable with. Focusing on Israel makes me very uncomfortable. For this guy to be focusing on Israel makes me want to leave the room.
Yeah, his focus is not great.
No good. No good.
So we have one more clip of Dale's appearance.
Sure.
And I think that, this is not about...
No good?
Political shit. It's not about a government. It is about hating Jewish people.
Well...
And then meanwhile, you know, I studied the New World Order, Pastor. Did you know it's run by Nazi devil worshippers?
No, I didn't know that. No.
Yeah, I really, really studied it. And at the highest levels, even some of these so-called Zionist leaders really aren't even what you'd call a Zionist. They're just into the occult.
I'm aware of that. I'm aware of that. And this is something that comes up in these newspapers, Forward and Washington Jewish Week, every once in a while. And I exposed that on the program. Everything that the Bible is against, Jewish leaders are on the front lines. I'm talking about sodomy, pornography, abortion, evolutionism. Everything that the Bible teaches against is praised in the Jewish press, in the Forward newspaper, in the Washington Jewish Week. It's in there every week. And these are this is one of the things that made up the content of my program, these outrageous, occultic, satanic things that the Jews are into, and they're proud of it.
Yeah, it might be why your program the station didn't want to air it anymore.
Dale, I appreciate what you want, and I know you like having that live time, so here's what we'll do. We can keep your show, and you can pre-tape it, or if you want that live mic, you have to change the show slightly. It's called Focus on Water Slides. It's 15 minutes.
Fucking demonic water slides.
About demonic water slides. That's fine if it's demonic water slides.
That's what the water slides are trying to
but
push
also
pornography.
The water slides can't be a metaphor for Jews.
Ah, shit.
That's one rule. We can't be doing that.
Yeah, I think that the presentation that the American Free Press wanted and Alex's reporting on is like, this guy just has some very reasonable criticisms of Israel and the influence on American politicians and the global foreign policy decisions that allyship makes.
Yeah.
And instead he's talking and it's fundamentally clear that he thinks that Jews are the enemy of Christianity.
Well, I mean, when you say like, hey, this group of people, they're people, but everything they believe in is against what my God believes in, and I know they cannot change, especially not through talking, that means you're probably not going to have a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it makes it clear why his show isn't on, and I think it invalidates the entire point that Alex's interview was supposed to achieve.
Yeah.
So he goes, and Alex gets back to some of the big news. Mm-hmm. Not Boston Legal.
All right.
Talking Waxman and the Bush signing into law.
Right.
Something that didn't pass.
Is he from Boston?
Let me read this article, though, first. It's from Raw Story. Congressman writes White House, did president knowingly sign law that didn't pass? And it's posted on prisonplanet.com and infowars.com. Representative Henry Waxman has alleged in a letter to White House Chief of Staff Andrew Carr that President Bush signed a version of the Budget Reconciliation Act that in effect did not pass the House of Representatives. Further, Waxman says there is reason to believe that the Speaker of the House called President Bush before he signed the law and alerted him that the version he had that he was about to sign differed from the one that actually passed the House. If true, this would put the president in willful violation of the U.S. Constitution.
Got him.
And it dealt with over $2 billion of extra funding. Now understand, there are 1,000-page bills passed every week. There are hundreds-plus-page bills passed every day.
So Alex doesn't understand this story, and you can tell because of the way that he's talking about the $2 billion discrepancy between the two versions of the bill. After this point, Alex descends into a riff, trying to get the audience to imagine a $2 billion bank robbery and how seriously people would take that, which is meant to imply that the version that Bush signed into law stole an extra $2 billion for these politicians.
Naturally.
In reality, the version that he signed provided $2 billion less dollars in funding for Medicare recipients having access to things like CPAP machines. You could make an argument that this is a $2 billion theft from the American people, but Alex doesn't think that Medicare should exist to begin with, so he is absolutely in favor of them having less funding. His policy preferences are in line with giving Medicare $2 billion less in funding, so what happened is actually exactly what he wants. But in order to make it into a narrative that plays on InfoWars, he has to spin it like it's Bush and his cronies adding $2 billion to the pot for themselves. If this whole different versions of the bill thing hadn't happened, he'd probably just ignore this story because it's boring. And he's just cold reading a Raw Story blog post. So, like, it wouldn't even matter to him if there wasn't some little intrigue.
Yeah, it is kind of interesting that you have to, whether or not he knows it, or, you know, it is at this time, like, he's a creature of instinct more than anything else, because he's also kind of creating his responses to these things in real time.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you have to take stances that are absurdly against your own position in order, but without any stakes, in order to convince people that you can have positions that are against your position. So it's so easy for him to be like, oh, look at this $2 billion stuff, and get real anger because he really wants it to be zero.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want them to get any money.
Yeah.
I'm furious that he would sign this bill and fake that anger into something that people could agree with.
Yeah. And by presenting it as like some kind of grand scam that the Bush and his cronies have done to enrich themselves, it sidesteps the entire question of, should Medicare recipients be getting this money? Yes, they should, but you don't believe that. We're not on the same page, but by creating a grander fiction, we can agree on that grander fiction.
We could not be further from the same team, and yet somehow your bullshit has made me feel close to you.
Yeah.
Oh.
Because it's fake.
I wonder if maybe I don't know if this is actually how it works, but if everybody was like, okay, this is the bill we agreed to sign, but then like he accidentally got the wrong typing, do we live on fairy tale laws? Is it like, ah, shit, there's no way to change it?
This was the plot of Bullworth 2. It never got made, but it's a script that was going around. No, I don't know. I mean, like, I'm certain there are mechanisms
to be just like a regular whiteout that you can do.
And I think that Alex wouldn't care now because Trump could just do whatever he wants.
Well, you can just rip that shit apart.
Yeah. So we know in the present day that Alex is painfully addicted to social media.
Sure.
But in 2006, he is just thinking about getting into MySpace.
Ooh, that's right.
And so that storyline continues a little bit.
I mean, everybody freaks out about China censoring stuff. MySpace has erased a whole bunch of blogs that we and others had put up there with names like Will, Rupert Murdoch, shut down this site. Haven't shut down our main one we put up yet. We haven't really plugged it.
Because it's not a lie.
I asked earlier, what's the name of our MySpace account? I saw them in their building yesterday and today, but we're just testing it. our MySpace account is about exposing MySpace. They may be sophisticated enough to leave ours up knowing we're big and we'll send them traffic while cutting out all the little ones. We'll see what happens. I mean, they're not dumb. They know it's a trap because then we'll show what a bunch of censors they are. There's already legions of examples of that.
This is the perfect scam for Alex. He can get on MySpace and take advantage of all the benefits that come from being on social media, all while pretending that his presence there is some kind of rebellious act. And the best part is, no matter what happens, the end result is proof of how dangerous and rebellious he is. If MySpace throws him off the site, it's proof that there's censors and Alex is right. If they don't throw him off, that's proof that they know he's too big to censor and they don't want to fall into his trap. Alex's career is full of rigged shit like this, where it's pretty much impossible for him to ever be wrong because his career is a carnival game. When he predicts a false flag attack is going to happen in the next month, if there's a big shooting, he gets to say that attack is the one he predicted. And if nothing happens, then he gets to claim that he scared the New World Order with his predictions, so they changed their plans. It's all a game, but in the meantime, Alex gets to use MySpace in exactly the way he's supposed to be above using it. It's an evil Trojan horse of censorship, but as long as he pretends that he's using it for a higher purpose, he gets to profit off of all the attention and free promotion that the site provides. He gets to use it exactly like any other business would.
Yeah.
But he gets to pretend that it's a high-minded trap that he's set for the devil.
Yeah, guys. See, here's the thing, right? So, I know, listen, you can't use this hot tub. Evil hot tub. Disgusting. You should never use this hot tub. Now, I'm going to sit in this hot tub to prove to them how evil it is. And you'll know how evil it is because I'll look so fucking comfortable in it. I'm going to look so comfortable in this hot tub. And if they kick me out, that's because they're evil. But if they don't kick me out, that's because you know they're evil and I'm having a grand time.
An analog of this would be like us taking ads and rationalizing it with like a, wouldn't it be so funny if we took ads?
Yeah.
Like, these companies are so dumb to
look
take
at
an ad from us.
Look how stupid they would be if we, listen, we'll tell you to go to fucking Target or whatever, but we'll be like, Target sucks.
Yeah, we're making fun of the idea of having an ad, but we're also enjoying all the benefits of having an ad.
Oh man, Target, bunch of assholes. They're giving you milk for like $3.29. Can you believe that, Dan?
It's 40% off this
week.
What a
shitting
bunch of assholes.
What a bunch of assholes.
It's
also Target owes us money for that.
That's the game that Alex is trying to play with MySpace.
Yeah.
And it's
absurd.
Yeah. So obviously at the beginning of this episode, probably one of the most exciting things happened imaginable, and that is that Alex said he was going to review a movie. And I kept waiting. I was like, all right, we got this anti-Semitic dude.
Yeah.
We got a bunch of complaining about Boston Legal.
Right.
He played that song from the pop punk band.
Did he?
Yeah, he did. And
it's
not bad.
Song?
Yeah. It stuck in my head a little bit.
If that's all we get from this episode, all right, I'll
take it. I went and listened to a couple more songs of theirs. They're
all
not
right.
Bad.
All right. Okay. If that's your flavor's pop punk, maybe take a chance.
They're really what you would expect of a high level local band in that era.
Yeah,
They're good, and I don't know. I'm not going to listen to a ton more of them, but very serviceable. And three of them are siblings. Three of the four band members are siblings.
That's crazy. Are the Hanson brothers around at this time?
Mm-bop. Yep, they were.
They were, weren't they?
Oh, yeah, because they were around when I was in high school.
Yeah, you're right. Man, we're old.
Yep. So anyway, Alex gets to his review of Scanner Darkly pretty late in the episode.
That's too late.
And he is not committed.
I said that I would do a review of Scanner Darkly, and I don't know how I do justice to it. It is Philip K. Dick's science fiction, phenomenons, really his autobiography about drug use and drug abuse and what it did to him and people around him, and why do we put people in prison for something that is something that's just chemical that they fell into. That is something very addictive and just destructive. It is a disease. Humans have always had substance abuse problems. And by making it illegal, we actually put money into it and then actually empower the industry and then make it fashionable and connected to money and then make more people actually get on it. All the research and evidence and historical lens shows us. But that's just the backdrop. A larger part of the backdrop is face scanning cameras, total surveillance, 20% of the public on this drug. And, of course, you learn that a private corporation working with the government, much like Halliburton and others, is actually creating the crisis. Problem, reaction, solution.
Spoilers, Alex.
Wait, did they make a Scanner Darkly?
Who? The New World Order? Problem, reaction, solution guys?
Yeah.
Hegelian dialectic people?
Yeah.
No, Philip K. Dick was exposing it.
Right.
He was exposing that.
Right.
That there's like a Halliburton type company that's making the drug. Bop, boop, bop.
Is that what a Scanner Darkly is about?
I mean, there is a drug. Yeah, there's drugs.
Well, sure, there is a drug. Well, yeah.
I think that if I had to peel out something that Alex is saying, it's legalized drugs.
I believe that would. If your question is why put people in jail for doing something that's awesome and that everybody likes, the answer should be you don't.
Yeah, it seems like the most real world application of this would be legalized drugs.
Yeah.
And he doesn't believe that.
Or explain why it's totally cool to imprison people just for the thing that we all do and we've had for a long, long time.
So his review of the actual movie is not, there's not much, but there is, he does talk about himself a bit.
Yeah, well.
And I know that it's got Winona Ryder. It's got...
did you see the movie?
Woody Harrelson. It's got Keanu Reeves. It's got just a lot of other people, and their performances are just amazing. Then they rotoscoped it. This is unlike any rotoscoping you've ever seen, where they animate each frame, so it's real, but it's not, and it makes their performances even more powerful. And the thing about this film, and I was there at this little sneak peek last night that I was invited to, and it was great to be there, invited by the director and others. It was great to be there and to see something new. I mean, that's what avant-garde means, is something new.
Once again, we have defined avant-garde.
Yeah.
So this is another, I only really played that clip because he promised us a movie review, and I'm obsessed with his movie reviews.
Yeah.
So you have to hear something. But the only thing that's important in that clip is Alex saying that he was invited by the director and others. That means not the director.
Right.
Richard Linklater, if he had invited Alex to this premiere...
I was invited by the director.
Exactly.
Yes.
You only say, I was invited by the director and others when the others are maybe more important.
The publicity people.
Right.
Or, not even that, somebody he knows who had a ticket.
I was on the reply all.
Yep.
And I accidentally got an email that invited me to this.
You bet.
Or something.
Did you get to walk down the red carpet? Then you weren't probably invited like that.
But I just know from the way he uses words and language that if you say, I was invited by the director and others, that means not director.
Yeah.
That's how Alex talks.
What a fun little tick to have.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lie, truth.
Whenever there is a lie that is kind of transparently a lie, you need to build it up more.
Yeah.
So many people invited
me. I got invited. I couldn't stop getting invited.
So anyway, Alex was a consultant on this film.
Yes, he was. He consulted about how Philip K. Dick...
Not a dick expert.
Nope.
But here is what he consulted on.
It's just, I'm so proud to be associated and to be involved with this film. I'm extremely proud of it. You know, I consulted on the film for some of the high-tech police state gadgetry.
Look
for the future. And I consulted in a moderate way, not in a huge way. I'm very impressed by the research that was done because Dick wrote this. Philip K. Dick wrote this back in the 70s. And I'm really impressed by his foresight of what was coming and what would develop.
So Alex, he consulted on the gadgetry of the New World Order, future gadgetry.
So he's like Q.
Well, except the Q made things.
Right.
He was a quartermaster.
I would assume that Linklater didn't go to the InfoWars studio and Alex had an array of here's your futuristic gadget for this. What are you looking for?
The things in the movie aren't real. There is that problem.
So then is it Alex's imagination of what things are supposed to look like?
Here's what Alex wants you to think.
Yeah.
He's a futurist.
Yes.
And basically he described the future and what things would look like and all this stuff. And then Linklater ran with it.
Right.
He's responsible for the vibe and the kind of aesthetic things that are in the movie.
Sure.
And that's dog shit.
No, no, no. It wasn't his idea, a grappling hook.
I think that that clip, I mean, it's short,
yeah,
but it includes grandiosity on an insane level, and then also modesty. False modesty of like, I consulted, not in a major way.
Oh, yeah. No, 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 no. Not in a big deal. Listen, he's a guy who said, should we have guns? And I was like, it's the future. Give them lasers. No big deal. No big deal. But the film wouldn't work without me. That's all I'm trying to say over here. Come on now.
I would bet anything. And I don't think it was Linklater who asked him.
No.
But I bet someone on set asked him, like, just sort of a passing conversational question.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, well, you know, I think that the globalists in the future would have brain wiping devices. Yeah. And then he's like, I'm a fucking consultant.
Obviously.
That's what happened here.
Hey, Alex, what do you think about these bracelets? They're weird, right? They look a little futuristic. They're so futuristic. I saw them in a dream, and then they were going to take all their legs off. I'm going to tell people I'm a consultant.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
So we have one last clip, and it's Alex talking. Now, keep in mind, he's in one scene. He's in a cameo.
Man.
It's a brief thing that he is in this movie.
Yeah.
He thinks he's going to be featured prominently.
Oh, boy.
And I appear prominently in the film. I'm going to appear even more prominently in the DVD, which DVD is now bigger than theatrical releases. So that'll be exciting, too. But a couple scenes that have me in them that you won't see in the film. You will see scenes I'm in the film, but you'll see even more on the DVD. And that'll be hitting theaters in July. So we're excited about A Scanner Darkly. I had all the stuff I wanted to say before the show, but I've kind of run my course already. I'm a little bit tired today.
Yeah, you don't have much to say.
Do you know what's crazy about that? That is exactly the type of shit you hear from a actor starting out a little delusional.
Yeah.
Like, I called my mom. I said, I'm going to be in this film, and I was only in there for 3 seconds, so I had to tell her, when you get the DVD, I'm in the deleted scenes.
I was in these scenes. I have no idea how they even could cut them. Like,
right?
Somehow, you know, you get time.
My
best
work is to come.
Yeah, like, absolutely. And much like with that early actor, too, like, there is no fucking shame in what Alex did.
Yep.
It's cool to be in a Richard Linklater movie.
Yep.
It's cool to be in A Scanner Darkly.
Yep.
And it's even cool to be like, hey, I'm Alex Jones, and I was stunt cast because I was going to be a guy yelling into a bullhorn.
It's super cool.
There is nothing to be embarrassed about just being in one scene.
Totally.
Like, the idea that you need to be featured prominently, or there's scenes in the DVD that, like, you don't need that, man.
Nope.
Just take the win. It's a fucking win. It's really cool.
Do you know what he's doing? He's being a poser.
Yes! Yes! Exactly! Hit my music!
There's no
I
other
wish
way
I could have done
describe
that more
it.
Smoothly. But yes, he's totally poser shit.
Yeah.
It's You did something really cool.
Yep.
And it's not cool enough for what you think you deserve to be.
Yeah, exactly.
And so you have to make it
more
in line with your own visions of yourself. And that's a fucking bummer.
Yeah.
And I feel deprived because I actually want to hear his review of Scanner Darkly.
I was thinking the same thing. I was so mad whenever we got here and you're like, I've been waiting for the review, because it's like, The moment he opens with, I'm going to review the movie, the audience,
yes,
everybody around is like, well, I wonder what he's going to say about this dumb movie.
Yeah, fireworks are going off. People are like,
absolutely. Okay, well, at least we got something to look forward to.
People are calling off work to get excited about hearing Alex's movie review.
Oh, my God.
So I'm kind of hoping that down the road in future episodes, he actually gets into the meat of this. But,
you know,
I don't know if he will.
It is that feeling right there, that thing that he's doing, the posing about being an actor thing, is so depressing. It's so depressing because it is emblematic of his inability to just enjoy something so cool.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, this guy has experienced cool shit beyond what 99% of all of us are ever going to experience. And he couldn't enjoy it the same way that you could enjoy, like, a really good apple and just be like, fuck, what a great apple. He couldn't enjoy being in a Linklater film because it wasn't cool enough in his mind for how cool he really is.
Yeah.
That sucks.
It does.
That sucks.
And I think it goes through so much of his work. Like, you know, he's involved in some episodes of, like, Jesse Ventura's conspiracy theory show or Joe Rogan's Rogan's a Joe Rogan questions everything
yeah.
show.
Yeah.
You know, like, and he has to turn them into like, I did these shows. Yeah. I ran these shows. It's like, no, you did something kind of cool. You are your own fucking weirdo.
Yep.
And because of that, people have stunt cast you in various things.
Yep.
Fucking enjoy that. Yep. That's the pinnacle of success for you.
Absolutely. No, we've gotten to do so many cool things, and one of the biggest focuses for me is just being like, hey, enjoy the shit out of this. Just
yes.
really enjoy it for what it is, like to be in that perfect moment.
Yeah.
For 5 seconds.
Like, we got to be on CNN, and it's not because like we run something no. or it was an accident.
No,
it
no,
was
completely nobody neither of us were like, oh, we've got some dangerous ideas and CNN had to come call it.
No,
somebody emailed probably by accident.
Yes, or some oversight or something, but it's
yeah.
because of the position we've put ourselves in
yeah.
through doing this.
Yeah,
and it was really cool.
It was fun,
but like, let's not pretend.
No, we're not TV appearance people.
Oh.
We're not talking heads,
although I'm in.
I don't know.
Nah. So, we come to the end of this, and I think it's a fascinating glimpse of posing.
Yep.
Of a very depressing view of Alex's sense of self.
Yeah.
And a lot of really weird stuff that is exactly the same as the present.
Yep.
So that's fun.
Yeah.
But we'll be back with another episode. Maybe we'll be in the past. Maybe
hopefully
we'll...
it'll be more about water slides. That's my goal.
Water slides and actual movie reviews.
That sounds like a great show.
Let's fucking do it. But whatever it is, it'll come later. For now, we have a website.
We do. It's knowledgefight.com.
Yep. We'll be back. But until then, I'm Neo. I'm Leo. I'm DZX Clark. I am the Mysterious Professor.
Woo, yeah, woo, yeah, woo.
And now here comes the sex robots.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.